Welcome to the History Reviewed channel, where we analyze the lies and deceptions of history. Here is another small excerpt from the wars in Africa, just to try and show you some things and give you some insights into warfare with non-whites. What we're going to take a look at is an incident with mortars. And there is a bit of a fun side to this, because we whites can have a laugh at our enemies. And this will also give you a little bit of an idea of how things actually worked and the weapons these blacks had. And then you'll also get a bit of an idea of how the whites responded and ideas that come out of it. Warfare is nothing more than competition. It's really the ultimate form of competition. That's all it is. And it's a competition in which you can get killed. That's all. But in life, I'm afraid, if you really want to get things that are of value, you're going to have to learn to take risks. And that is the nature of our race. And our race has taken so many risks over so many tens of thousands of years that this is old hat for our people. So I want to explain a few things to you about Africa, and then you'll see some of the lessons you can learn from it. That device that you see on the screen there, that's an 82mm mortar. It's a Russian 82mm mortar. And this is the key weapon that we're going to be discussing in this little incident. Now, these blacks who fought us did not fight us with sticks and stones. They were given proper military weapons by the Russians and the Chinese. They were given AK-47s. They were given mortars like these. They were given RPGs, which are rocket-propelled grenades. They were given all kinds of other weapons. They were given Strela anti-aircraft missiles. They were given anti-aircraft guns, 23mm anti-aircraft guns. They were given lots and lots of weaponry and training. They were shown how to use it. And they were given these things. They were given these things basically for free, the only condition being that if they win, then they have to see to it that they support the Soviet Union and China. That was the quid pro quo. So this 82mm mortar, and just a point about these 82mm mortars, the Soviets had an engineering idea, which is quite clever actually, that when they were busy making weapons of their own, and they saw, of course, that they are going to be fighting against the Western world. Basically, Jewish communism is going to be focusing on fighting against Western weapons. They came up with an interesting engineering idea, and it was that when they create weapons, they will try to make their weapons a caliber that is 1mm greater than Western weapons. And the reason being that it means they can use captured Western ammunition in their weapons, but the Western world can't use their ammunition in their weapons. For example, the West would have an 81mm mortar, and that's why the Soviets designed the 82mm mortar. The 82mm mortar can fire 81mm mortar shells, but the 81mm mortar cannot fire 82mm shells. So that was the theory. And of course, these things were thought out by the Russians, who are whites. So it's a clever idea. They came up with many clever ideas. However, sometimes the reality actually turns out to be a little bit different. Because in the case of Africa, we whites ended up getting so many of their weapons that we actually liked their weapons and used their weapons against the blacks. So we captured as much as we could and we used it ourselves. Or we gave it to blacks who were fighting on our behalf. So a mortar is a small artillery weapon that can be carried by men. You do get much bigger mortars, even ones with wheels, but it's a very useful weapon. A mortar is actually an amazing weapon, and mortars are great killers, actually. And it's truly a fantastic weapon. People don't realize how dangerous a mortar really is. It's an absolutely useful weapon. So these blacks didn't use mortars all that much because their problem was carrying the mortars and the mortar rounds with them, because it is quite a heavy weapon and the ammunition is quite heavy to carry around. So one of the advantages the whites had was we used vehicles and aircraft to move our logistics for us, whereas the blacks operating in the bush had to do things by walking and carrying the weapons and the ammunition. But then again, what they did was they would get other blacks to come and assist them and to help carry their loads. So that is the way the logistics of the war worked. Now, one of the things that I want to point out that I've noticed in wars in Africa and fighting the blacks is that the natural aptitude of the whites, the natural mathematical aptitude of white men, works to our advantage. And you'll find that it comes to the fore in all kinds of technical weapons. It comes to the fore in vehicles that you drive, aircraft that you fly, and artillery. And even in normal shooting, firing a normal rifle, believe it or not, the blacks are actually at something of a disadvantage when firing even a proper military rifle that would be something that normal whites would understand without a problem. The blacks actually have a problem with that. Black Americans might be better at this than blacks in Africa, but even when taught in Africa, the blacks in Africa have a problem. They struggle to have the same level of proficiency as the whites. And I'd say that they're at the best when they are using infantry weapons like rifles and grenades. But as the weapons become more technically specialized, they are at a greater and greater disadvantage. And artillery is a place where they already start having a disadvantage. Now, what whites just take for granted, as whites take so many things for granted, whites take it as a given that to understand something like trigonometry and perhaps ballistics and the angle of projectiles that you fire, whites assume that everybody else can do math and can do it to the same level of proficiency as us. And this is not true. In Africa, the blacks really struggle even with simple maths, even with things like trigonometry, things that we find quite natural and quite intuitive. They struggle with it. And you're going to see what happens with these mortars. Now, the blacks aren't always incompetent. There are times when they can use these weapons quite well. But on the whole, the whites use these weapons much better and the end results are much superior. Now, a mortar is something like a howitzer. It fires at a very high angle. So it's not a direct line of fire weapon. It fires at a very high angle. And so it carries out a parabolic trajectory and it goes high up into the air and then it comes down and it falls almost vertically onto the enemy. And even these small mortars, like those 80mm mortars, they can fire to quite tremendous ranges. You're looking at about 7 to 9 kilometers that a weapon like that can fire. So as an infantry weapon, it's a very, very useful weapon. And it's a killer. It's a killer. Before I tell you the story from Rhodesia, I just want to mention similar types of stories of blacks struggling with high-tech weapons. Now, of course, blacks also get to use computers. They get to use other sophisticated things. And again, my own perception, my own conclusions from working with them, observing them, etc., is that you can give them the most high-tech weapons imaginable. Yes, it will help them. Yes, if you get a computer to assist you in aiming your artillery, etc., it will help you. It will help them. This is all totally true. But in warfare and life, you will find that there comes a time for a need for excellence. And these people will be at a disadvantage. What if they can't get their computer to the battlefield? What if something prevents them from being able to use their technical assistant, if you will? There are times when natural skills come into play. The same is true with fighter aircraft. The same is true for all aspects of warfare, where in the heat of the moment, commanders and soldiers have to make choices. And if they are dependent on some kind of tool that helps them to function, then the moment that they run into either the lack of use of that tool, or the tool is broken, or what happens if they have to use an artillery piece and they don't have their computer assistant with them? What then? These are the kinds of things that happen in the real world. And these are the times when these people will be at a disadvantage. And I assure you that in all aspects of warfare, you will find all kinds of situations cropping up. Warfare is not like normal life. You can't stop the battle and say, oh, hold on, I need to go and get my laptop because I'm at a disadvantage. I need my laptop to help me to aim the artillery or the mortar and to get it at the right settings, etc. In the heat of the moment, lots of things do not function the way that they do in normal life. So I am convinced that Jews stealing white technology, handing it to non-whites to use against whites, that yes, it does harm us, but there's also a limit to how much benefit they get from it. And ultimately, our own innate skills will help us to survive and to outwit them even when they have better weapons than we do. And in our fights against the blacks, there were instances where the blacks either had superior weapons or weapons that we had no countermeasure to, and we were able to manage to turn it in our favor even then. For example, in the Rhodesian Bush War, the blacks for the first time started getting Strela anti-aircraft missiles from the Russians. So they had these missiles that they could fire from the ground, these sort of shoulder-held missiles that they could fire up at our aircraft. And our aircraft were slow. We even had civilian aircraft modified for military use. These aircraft and helicopters were not built for combat, so they didn't have all the natural features that you would need in combat in order to be protected against missiles, ground fire, etc. However, the Rhodesian Air Force went and looked at this problem of these missiles, and then they started saying, how are we going to overcome this? And they came up with the idea that they needed to take the exhausts of the planes and the helicopters and either direct the exhaust trail upwards while also using a paint that helped to have a little bit of basic, let's call it stealth capability. And so with just some modifications to our weapons, we were able to then function and have our helicopters and our planes flying in areas where blacks are firing missiles at them. And then the missiles would miss our aircraft virtually all of the time, or most of the time, because of these countermeasures that we'd taken. And our pilots would just see, oh, there goes a missile. You know, somebody fired a missile at me and it's past me and it's exploded now. In warfare, as in every aspect of life, including politics, including race, including all kinds of thoughts on survival, having children, having a family, etc., you will find that in all aspects of life that there is a need for what I would call technical proficiency and technical excellence. You will find it in all aspects of life, whether it is driving a car or using your computer. You will find that you need to understand the mechanics of the device. And this is something that whites are very good at. And if we focus on these types of skills, you will see that it will give us an edge. Our tools, our machines, our vehicles, I would call it our robots. All our mechanical devices give us tremendous edges. And even when the non-whites and the Jews get hold of these devices, we can still get more value out of that device than they can. And it boils down to excellence and technical proficiency. Your enemy may have a better artillery piece than you, but you might be able to just have a better usage of your older artillery piece and still kick your enemy's ass. That is the kind of thing that I'm trying to get across to you. And sometimes the lack of aptitude of the blacks comes out clearly in certain events that take place. Then you find out that man oh man, even when you give them an advanced weapon, it's not working so well. And I've studied some of the battles that have been fought by the new South African army in the time of black rule. And it's a topic we're going to come back to again. And in there, you will see how, despite using the same tools that whites used that were absolutely deadly for whites, that the end result for the blacks was not the same. Now, with regard to the mortars, I want to tell you a little mortar story that I read about several years ago when I was doing my African Crisis website. I read one day about a woman, a white woman, in the east of Johannesburg. She lived in the far eastern side in the suburb of Benoni. This white woman was home one day, and when she was home, suddenly something crashed into her living room through the roof. And she was absolutely shocked to discover that a mortar shell had fallen straight through the roof of her house. Then people went immediately to try and figure out where the hell did the mortar shell come from. And it turned out that some of the South African army were busy doing exercises with practice mortar rounds some distance away from Benoni. However, these blacks, when they had to point their mortar tubes Some of them obviously did not understand even basic physics and directions, and so somebody must have pointed the mortar tube towards the suburb instead of away from the suburb. Luckily, it was a dummy round and it was just for testing and exercises, so it didn't explode. But clearly, somebody was pointing in the wrong direction, and the next thing you know, is a mortar round that should be moving away from the suburb moves into the suburb and crashes through the woman's roof. But probably the most intense example of technical dysfunctionality that I came across, which I one day want to find again in my database, so all I can do is recall it from memory, was an instance that occurred in, I think it was Bloemfontein, in the center of South Africa, where we also have a number of military bases. The Swedes manufacture a number of excellent weapons, and one of those weapons is a Bofor anti-aircraft gun. Now, an anti-aircraft gun has got multiple barrels because it's got to have such an intensely high rate of fire. It's got multiple barrels and they fire at an extremely high rate. Because they are firing into the sky, aiming at aircraft, and they're trying to hit this aircraft. So it fires quite a large caliber round, which I think also explodes, and it's got to fire it at a high rate, at a great distance, at a great speed. So here in South Africa, this was maybe about 7 years ago or so, as best I can recall from memory. It's maybe not dead accurate. But I read an article where one day a whole bunch of blacks were killed. And the story basically went something like this. There were some blacks, maybe 30 or so of them, at a course where they were learning how to use anti-aircraft guns. And it seems to me that one black woman was put in the seat of this anti-aircraft weapon, and the other blacks were actually standing in front of this thing. And the impression I got from the article was that this black woman must have hit like the trigger of the anti-aircraft gun. But not knowing exactly what make of anti-aircraft gun it was, I'm assuming it might even be something like pressing a button. And maybe she was sitting there and she like pressed the button. And maybe she just pressed the button lightly or whatever. And this thing just goes brrr. And the next thing is, 30 of her comrades are lying dead on the ground. They're all killed. Because the weapon fires so fast and it's so deadly, the white man's weapon fires so fast, it's so deadly, it's so precise, that maybe she just needed to touch the button for a split second and it just goes brrr. And 30 of her buddies are stone cold fucking dead. And of course there was a whole hoo-ha about this thing, etc. Big problems because of this accident that had occurred. Now there are many rules and things that they have to bring in to try and make these blacks learn to handle these weapons with care, because these weapons are so dangerous. And there are things that these blacks need to be trained to do that the whites would not easily make the same mistake. Whites also make mistakes, but just not to the same extent. And of course, even if you invent new methods of making it safer for them, all of these things have got costs and other inefficiencies attached to it. If you really want to understand what makes us function better, it is our precision and our ability to do things carefully but with extreme accuracy. We have got an ability to function that is much more efficient than these non-whites. So all I'm saying is that, yes, you can give them computers and all kinds of things, but you'll see that there are costs attached to it and inefficiencies attached to it. And ultimately, we still have the edge. We always have the built-in edge that comes from our innate skills. So now let's turn to the Rhodesian story that I want to tell you. In this case, it has to do with some events that took place in Rhodesia in 1977. And there are two aspects to this story. The one is about white creativity and problem solving, and the other one is about the blacks getting it wrong and what happens to them. The blacks from time to time would attack fixed positions, especially military bases or airfields, or just firing mortars into a town. These things did not happen often, but they did happen now and then. So because of the danger of mortars landing on an airfield and the shrapnel from the exploding shells then causing damage to aircraft, because aircraft are much softer targets, even if the blacks just fire and they don't even have to hit a plane directly, but the shells are just exploding and the shrapnel and stone and so forth is flying around, it will cause damage to the aircraft. And in the case of Rhodesia, we are short of money. We have to watch every cent very carefully. So somebody came up with the idea, some white guy came up with the idea, that one way of preventing damage to our aircraft in our forward airfields, these are airfields that are closer to the battlegrounds, that one way of maybe protecting the aircraft is actually to put up nets and put these nets over the aircraft. And the idea was that if these shells are coming down and the net is strong enough and high enough, etc., that you might be able to actually catch a mortar shell and it'll actually get a soft landing in the nets and not hit the ground and explode. And believe it or not, this idea actually worked. So that's one of the things that will come out of this story, which I'm going to be reading to you shortly. But the other one has to do with the mortars. I managed to find a photograph of those wire mesh protection fences at what seems to be a forward airfield in Rhodesia. So what you're looking at there is that wire mesh on those tall poles, and this is to protect the aircraft. As you can see, the resolution of this photo is not that good. I suspect this was cut out of a portion of a bigger photo. So if you look very closely, you'll actually see aircraft with single propellers standing there. There are about three of them in a row. And then you can see those tall poles that are going quite high up into the air, quite a lot of them. And then you can see the wire mesh on top. So these are the roofless protection pens, and that wire mesh is there to catch the mortar rounds that are coming in. So it works something like those circus acts, those nets in a circus, except in this case, it's catching a mortar round that's quite heavy, that's coming in from high at a heck of a speed, and it manages to catch it and prevent it from exploding. And there you have it. little Rhodesian invention that saved a lot of trouble. And I just want to explain something to you about that mortar, that 82mm mortar that you're looking at. That 82mm mortar has got a big round plate on the bottom of it. That plate is known as a base plate. The purpose of the base plate is because when it fires the shell up at a high trajectory, the base plate is actually going to take the majority of the recoil of the mortar. So the base plate is actually absorbing the shock of firing the shell into the sky. However, you can actually fire a mortar without using a base plate. The base plate is heavy, and so to carry the base plate, it can be something that you might not want to take with you. And so what you do is you just take the mortar without the base plate and you hold it at an angle and you fire it. The only problem is that now you get a strong recoil and it'll push the pipe of the mortar, it'll push it into the ground. But of course you can still wiggle it around, pull it out, etc., re-aim it, etc. It's just that it's not as nice and convenient as using that nice tripod and the base plate. So there were times when the blacks would actually take their mortars and move around with their mortars, carrying the mortar itself and the ammunition, but they'd leave behind the base plate. And that base plate's that heavy round thing there. So that's an important part of what you're about to hear. So let me read the story to you about what happened in December 1977 at a forward airfield in Rhodesia. So here goes. A strange incident occurred on 17 December 1977 when CTs mounted an attack on FAF-8. So let me just pause there. CTs is the Rhodesian abbreviation for Communist Terrorists. So these are the blacks. And FAF is Forward Airfield. So it's Forward Airfield number 8. So these communist terrorists mounted an attack on FAF-8 and the army base that was also sighted on Grand Reef Airfield. A long time prior to this, a project proposal by armorers at Thornhill was brought to me. Now this me is one of our Air Force guys who turned out to be one of our best guys at developing weapons. So this is what he's writing about. So these armorers came to him with an idea, and this is the idea. This was to arrest enemy mortar bombs in heavy diamond mesh fencing stretched above the roofless protection pens in which our aircraft parked at forward airfields. I was very skeptical initially, but the armorers proved their theory by successfully arresting a number of captured 82mm mortar bombs, none of which detonated. In consequence, all forward airfields had the appropriate heavy netting stretched out high above aircraft pens. So let me just pause there. So there you can see white ingenuity, and the white guy's coming up with a plan, and the plan seems rather wild at first, and the plan works. So by putting this heavy mesh at very high levels and stretched properly with the right tension, it can actually capture 82mm mortar bombs and stop them from detonating. So let's continue. When I heard that mortar bombs had been used against Grand Reef, I flew down immediately without waiting for details. On arrival, I spoke to Flight Lieutenant Rob McGregor, who was FAF commander and was disappointed to learn from him that none of the bombs had come down over the aircraft pens. Okay, so what he's excited about is that he heard that these black terrorists had actually attacked one of the forward airfields where they had put up this wire mesh covering, because he wanted to go and see if it had stopped the mortar shells from detonating, etc. This guy was our guy who did a lot of weapons development, and he was jumping around quite a lot. I will tell you more about some of the pretty cool weapons that he invented. But in this case, he wanted to quickly go and see whether this wire mesh had stopped these mortars and how effective it had been. But when he got there, he heard an interesting story. So, he goes and he speaks to the FAF commander, and this is what he's told. Nevertheless, it was interesting to see how the CT, Communist Terrorist Group, which had been specially trained and briefed for this job, had botched it. The group, consisting of about 40 men armed with AK-47 assault rifles, RPD machine guns, RPG rocket launchers, and another 6 men with a single 82mm mortar tube, approached Grand Reef under cover of darkness. So let me pause there. So here you've got a group of 40 blacks. They've been trained and prepared to carry out, let's call it, a black special forces assault on this white airfield, on the Rhodesian airfield. But things go very wrong, as you will see. All the CTs carried mortar bombs, which were dropped off with the mortar crew, who set up about 40 meters behind the left flank of the main line. In this line, the men set up next to a cattle fence that ran parallel to the runway, the aircraft runway. Just 150 meters from their position, across the runway, lay the army camp with the Air Force camp adjoining its right side. So these blacks are right next to the runway and next to an army camp and Air Force camp, and they're going to launch a surprise attack on these whites and give these whites a good revving. However, it's not quite going to work out the way that these, let's call it, black special forces expect. All the guns opened up together, sending a hail of bullets towards both bases. Rob McGregor told of the incredible noise and brilliant display of red and green tracer bullets, most of which went over the camp. The CTs may have been overexcited or blinded by their own tracers, because considering the weight of fire, amazingly few rounds hit their intended targets, though a few RPG-2 rockets detonated on sandbag protection walls. So let me just pause there. Sandbags, as used in World War I, World War II, and I think even the American Civil War, sandbags are very useful, and they work very well. So these blacks are opening up with their machine guns, their direct fire weapons like the rocket-propelled grenades, machine guns, automatic fire, and they're actually shooting over the camp instead of hitting inside the camp. So lots of noise, lots of heavy firepower, and very few bullets actually striking the camps. You would imagine that if you're shooting at a base that you'd be able to hit it with something. It's almost like shooting at an elephant at close range and not hitting it, sort of thing. But if you thought they botched that, wait until you hear the rest of the story. This is quite funny, I must tell you. In the meanwhile, the CT mortar crew launching bombs as fast as they could were oblivious to the incredible cock-up they were making, simply because they had been too lazy to bring along their heavy but all-important base plate for their mortar tube. So these blacks have got their mortar tube, and remember what I told you about Benoni and pointing the mortar in the right direction? So these guys have got their mortar tube, they're holding it up, and they're chucking in the mortar shells one after the other, and it's firing at a hell of a pace because a mortar can fire very fast. So they're shooting like crazy. But they hadn't brought their base plate along. So listen to this. The first mortar bomb landed in the army camp, killing an unfortunate soldier, Signaler Obert Zvechebwe, very hard name to pronounce. Bottom line is, they actually killed a black soldier. So they killed a black soldier who's on the Rhodesian side. So the first mortar kills a soldier, whose body was found lying under his bed. With the launching of this bomb, the mortar tube, without a base plate to distribute the heavy shock load, bedded into the ground. With each successive firing, the tube bedded deeper and deeper, causing the tube angle to progressively steepen. So let me just explain there. As they are firing continuously, they're not checking to ensure that the mortar tube is pointing at the same angle. So the first one beds it into the ground, and as they are firing, it gets pushed deeper and deeper into the ground. But the angle is going higher and higher towards 90 degrees. So as these blacks are shooting, the angle getting higher and higher, the mortar shells are actually going to start falling closer and closer to them. So the first one hit into the Rhodesian army camp, but that's not what's going to carry on happening. So it continues. The consequence of this was that the second bomb fell short of the army camp, and every bomb thereafter moved further from the target and ever closer to the line of communist terrorists still firing their guns along the fence line. So let me just pause there. So you've got the guys with their rifles and their RPGs, they're closer to the camp, and these other guys with the mortar, they're a bit further away. But these bombs are starting to drop closer and closer to their own position and their own people. When the angle of the tube was close to vertical, bombs fell amongst the communist terrorist gunners, killing two and seriously wounding others. Panic set in because the men believed the mortar bombs were coming from the army camp. The attack broke off and the communist terrorists ran for their lives, leaving their wounded to crawl away unaided. So as these guys are firing more and more, eventually the bombs start falling among them, and then they think that it's the Rhodesian army that's firing mortars at them, and they start ducking and diving, and they're actually being killed by their own stuff. And in their panic, they run the fuck away, and they leave their wounded comrades to look after themselves. Total panic and chaos and shambles. The proper British word is a cock-up. So there you've got it. The blacks firing their artillery, they didn't bring the base plate, and look at what happens to them. So, and this is a simple weapon. It's a simple infantry weapon that white men had been using for decades. And so here you see, that is what happens when you don't pay attention to detail and you don't think clearly and you are dealing with a weapon that is somewhat different to a line of sight weapon like a rifle. Even with the rifles and the machine guns, notice how the blacks are shooting into the night and they're shooting over the camp. So that'll give you a little bit of an idea of how their aptitude for mathematics and trigonometry counts against them in simple things that actually are also a matter of life and death. And it gets ever wilder. The more you move into deeper technology, the more you'll see how at a disadvantage these people are. But I thought this was an absolute classic. This was probably the funniest story I've ever heard from the Rhodesian War. The blacks firing their mortar until eventually it points almost vertically upwards and their own their own shells are falling amongst them, killing them. And they think the army is shooting at them. Meanwhile, the army's not even shooting at them. So panic and mayhem and everything, and it all comes from them. And I hope that you will start to appreciate why I am so confident that there is still much that can be done in Africa. This game is far, far from over. We are far from dead. So this made me laugh a lot. And I hope you had a bit of a laugh too. Don't be afraid of these people. Don't be afraid of them. If they really want to fight us, really want to fight us, things can go horribly wrong. And when you get to heavier weapons, more sophisticated weapons, it just gets crazier and it works more and more for the white man. So don't fear others with our stolen technology. We're still okay. These are my websites, historyreview.com, africancrisis.info, and white-shop.biz. This is my attempt to try and do some Jew-free trading and experimenting with the next level of stuff. So, thank you very much for listening. We'll be chatting again soon. Take care of yourselves.